Podcasting from baseball heaven, St. Louis, Missouri, home to float trips, gooey butter cake, and the Gateway Arch. This is the Navigate the Rapids podcast, where you find out how to effectively run and market your business. And now, here's your host, Will Hanke.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Navigate the Rapids, where we help you effectively run and market your business. My name is Will Hanke, owner of Red Canoe Media. Today we're wading through the complexities of trademarks, copyrights, and intellectual property. Now, before we get started with my guest today, I wanted to let you know real quick about a private membership area on the Red Canoe Media website called Red Canoe Elite. This is a private area created exclusively for business owners that want to know more about the world of online marketing. There's tutorial videos on everything from WordPress SEO, Google Webmaster Tools, a whole lot more back there. We're hosting a coaching call next week for the members where they can ask any kind of question they want to about anything they're doing related to online marketing, and it's going to be great. Now, if you want to join that, you can do so for just $7, and it's at redcanoemedia.com/elite. Now, my guest today is Morris Turek, a trademark and copyright attorney located in St. Louis, Missouri. He helps entrepreneurs, businesses, organizations, and educational institutions avoid the high cost of devastating effects on being sued for intellectual property infringement, which doesn't sound all that pleasant. So Morris focuses his practice on law almost exclusively on the trademark and copyright clearance, federal trademark and copyright registration, intellectual property litigation, and intellectual property licensing. He's a 2005 graduate of St. Louis University School of Law and the owner and founder of YourTrademarkAttorney.com. Morris, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Will.
I appreciate you jumping on. So the way I usually start the show is going to be the same today. Tell me how you got interested in trademark law.
I was working at another law firm when I was the summer after my second year of law school back in 2004. I was working at another law firm doing not trademark law, doing class action lawsuits and things like that. And I really didn't like it very much. And I was actually introduced to an attorney who does trademark and copyright work. And I was doing some work for her on the side while I was still working for this other law firm.
Oh, interesting.
And then after after that sort of that summer was over, she asked me if I wanted to join her as a law clerk while still in law school, and that's where I learned trademark and copyright law.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. So I mentioned earlier in your intro about trademarks and copyrights. What are the differences between the two?
All right, so basically a trademark can be a name or a logo, a slogan, a character, a symbol that is used by businesses or organizations to identify and distinguish their products and services, and to indicate the source of their products and services. So, for example, the McDonald's Golden Arches is a trademark. The name Coca-Cola is a trademark. The Apple logo is a trademark. So those are all trademarks because they're used in connection with the advertising and sale of products or services. Copyright, on the other hand, protects original works of authorship. So copyright protects things like books, movies, music, websites, computer software, those kinds of original works, not necessarily creative works, but original works.
Interesting. Okay. So what are the benefits of registering a trademark? And that's with the United States Patent Office, Patent and Trademark Office, right?
Yeah. So there are a lot of benefits to registering a trademark. The most well-known, I would say most important benefit is that it gives the owner of the trademark exclusive nationwide rights to use the trademark throughout the United States. And so, without a federal trademark registration, you might only have rights in the geographic areas where you're operating, where you're using the mark. So, you might only be selling in St. Louis, so you'd only have rights in St. Louis, for example.
Interesting. Okay.
Registration also does a lot of other things. It prevents the registration of confusingly similar trademarks. If you have a registration, the trademark office won't allow the registration of a confusingly similar mark. Gives you also other advantages in trademark infringement litigation. If you ever have to sue somebody for infringement, or if you ever get sued for infringement, having that registration is helpful. If you're somebody who sells products rather than services, it can prevent the importation of infringing products, which is a big deal, you know, especially with all the infringement going on in China and other Asian countries. And also, if you do business internationally, having a United States trademark registration can help you get registration and protection in other countries. And another one would be that you get to use the Circle R designation, the registered trademark symbol, so that designates that your trademark is registered.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit more about the how it protects your products, especially when it comes to the whole China thing.
Yeah, I mean, a trademark, obviously, it doesn't protect the product or the service necessarily, right? It's only a trademark prevents others from trying to sell a similar or competing or related product or service using the same trademark.
Got it.
So if you have a United States registration and you register that registration with Customs and Border Protection, it will help prevent somebody from importing products, similar products to yours perhaps, with a similar name.
Okay, I got it. Well, how do you know if somebody's using a trademark on the internet that's yours?
There are a couple of ways to do some research. First thing you can do is obviously just do a search. You can use Google or Bing and just type in your trademark, maybe follow that with your, you know, with the types of products that, or services that you sell, and see if somebody is using something similar to yours. That's a good way of starting. Another thing you can do is set up Google Alerts. I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with that, but you can tell Google to basically send you an email every time a certain, you know, word or phrase is used on the internet. Of course, if your trademark consists of very common English language words, you're going to get thousands of emails, perhaps. But if you have a more unique or creative trademark, you can set up a Google alert, and it'll notify you when it sees a use on the internet. Another way of doing it also is hiring a monitoring company. You can hire monitoring companies to monitor the internet and also monitor the trademark records for uses or applications that have been filed for confusingly similar marks.
Interesting. Okay, so the back to the Google Alerts thing, that's a great tip, and I use Google Alerts a lot. It's google.com/alerts, and so you can go there and basically plug in a phrase or something that you want to search, and like you said, every time that particular phrase is found online, they'll email you a link to that page.
Yeah, and it's particularly helpful, you know, if you want to, you know, see whether a competitor might be using your trademark. You know, typing in, you know, getting that Google alert would notify you of that or could notify you of it.
Yeah, that's real good. And along those lines, if you wanted to watch for like a tagline or something like that, you could actually just put the words in quotes, and then Google will actually only search that specific phrase or alert you when that specific phrase comes up.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great tip. I use alerts all the time because of, you know, it's a great way to, like you said, keep track of your competitors as well and what they're up to, the scum that they are, you know.
nice way of putting it.
Yeah. So along those same lines, is there something you can do to watch to see if somebody's trying to register your trademark with the actual United States Patent and Trademark Office?
Yeah, there are a couple things you can do. Obviously, the first thing you can do is go to the United States Patent and Trademark Office's website. That website is uspto.gov, and you can go to the trademark section and click on Search Trademarks and type in your trademark and see what comes up. You might find, you know, again, if your trademark consists of, you know, very common words, you might get a lot of hits, so it might be hard to sift through that. But if you have a mark that is more unique, if you type it into the trademark office's website, you'll get a list of maybe, you know, a dozen or less, and you can see if there's somebody who has applied to register a mark that's confusingly similar to yours. And so that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is you can hire, like I talked about, you can hire a monitoring company that will essentially monitor the trademark records for new filings, and it will send you an email based on what you tell it to send it. So if you want to know all trademarks with the name, you know, Superman in it, you can, every time an application is filed with the word Superman, you'll get an email notification with the information about the application, so that if you want to take action against it, you can.
Interesting. Do you have any of those monitoring services that you prefer? Or?
I don't really recommend any. There are tons of them, and they're all priced about the same. They all do a fine job.
Cool.
Really, the only you know, they're only about $200 a year, and sometimes they're a little bit less.
Oh, good.
Depending on what trademark, how many trademarks you're monitoring, but it's not expensive. But I would say that I would only probably recommend doing it, though, hiring a monitoring company. If you're a more substantial business that could actually has the resources to pursue a potential infringement or a potential problem, because obviously if you're monitoring the records but you can't do anything about what's actually been filed, I don't know that there's a point in monitoring them.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. That's good. So let's talk a little bit about logos. For the first couple years of my business, I found a really cool arrow pointing up with the dollar sign as the kind of like the shadow, and it was just something I found as a clip art item and turned it into my logo. So you probably think that's a bad idea.
I do. You know, clip art, and again, I know that clip art is sort of dying nowadays anyway, but to the extent that people still use it, clip art, you're not supposed to use clip art as a trademark or as a logo. In fact, it says it in the terms of use in the clip art programs. And the problem also is, nobody has exclusive rights to clip art. And so, you know, as a trademark, you want to be able to claim exclusive rights to use it, but you can't do that with clip art. And the same is true for using an image that you just sort of find on the internet. It's not yours, so you can't claim exclusive rights to it. So it's probably best that you don't do something like that.
Yeah. Now, is there any problem with finding an image, or maybe finding three or four, and then getting with a designer and modifying those to something that's original?
It's a matter of degree. I mean, certainly. You want to be careful about doing those kinds of things because we're drifting over to the copyright issues. You know, somebody probably owns rights to those images. You know, those images are probably not in the public domain, though they very well might be. So you always have to worry about taking somebody else's work, modifying it, and sort of claiming it as your own, because it could be seen as a derivative work for which you would need permission from the copyright owner of the image.
Yeah. Now, a couple of years ago, I had a friend that made a bunch of money creating logos on 99designs.com. And it was funny because when I talked to him, pretty much his entire philosophy was whatever their business was, take some sort of icon related to that and put a swoosh on it. And
okay.
more likely than not, you know, this was probably 6 or 7 years ago, but, you know, everybody was into the swooshes for some reason. And so it was kind of funny that's what he was doing, and he was making money doing it.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm glad somebody was making money off of it, I guess.
Yeah, it's the whole swoosh movement maybe you didn't know about.
I don't know how Nike feels about that with their swoosh.
Right. Yeah. So how do you know if your name or tagline is for your product or service is actually available?
All right. Well, there are a couple things you would want to do. The first thing you'd want to do is again, go to the trademark office's website and type in your trademark. Just do a basic search. And you can see if there's any applications or registrations for marks that might be confusingly similar to yours. So you might find trademarks that are very similar to yours in, as far as, you know, appearance or sound or commercial impression, but the products or services may not be related. So, you know, one, you might find one for a restaurant, whereas you sell shoes. You know, there may not be really any relatedness there.
Okay.
So that probably wouldn't be seen as confusingly similar. With some caveats, of course. You know, you can't use the word Nike even for an unrelated product to clothing and apparel, right? I mean, Nike's so famous.
Yeah.
So you'd want to start there. You know, do a little trademark search on the trademark office's website. Now, if you don't come up with any obvious conflicts, the next thing you probably should do is hire an attorney to do a more comprehensive federal search for you. The search you can do on the trademark office's website is a great place to start. It's what we call a knockout search. If you find a conflict, you hire an attorney, they're going to find the same conflict in literally 10 seconds, and you're not going to want to pay an attorney for 10 seconds of work. So it's good to start, doing it yourself. But when you don't find any obvious conflicts, that's when you go to an attorney and say, okay, I didn't find any obvious conflicts. You do your search, which is more comprehensive, and Sure. Let me know if I find, you know, let me know if you find any conflicts. Now we do that search, and then we let you know whether we found any conflicts or not, whether we believe there's going to be any problems. Also, you'd want to, you know, go ahead and do an internet search. Again, use Google, use Bing. Type in your trademark. See what's out there. It's a good thing to do. And then you can also tell your attorney about what you found on the internet as well. So if you get positive, obviously, let's start with negative. If you get negative search results, if your attorney tells you, you know, there's a major problem, you know, you're probably going to want to think about, adopting a different mark. Or if it's a mark that you've been using for a long time, maybe you can continue to use it, but you won't be able to register it.
Okay.
So there's different things that can happen in the course of giving sort of a search opinion, depending on what the search results are. But if the results are positive, you know, no conflicts, then you might consider seeking federal registration of your trademark.
Okay. Is part of it subjective? So you talked about the Golden Arches. Mm-hmm. What if I had a business? What if my last name was McConnell, and I wanted a yellow M as the logo? You know how much of that comes into play?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that trademark law is extremely subjective. I've had a number of times where I've attempted to register a trademark on behalf of a client, and it's gotten rejected. And instead of appealing the decision, we simply withdrew the application, refiled for the same exact mark, for the same exact products, got a different examiner at the trademark office, and it went through. So it's very subjective. What one person thinks is confusing and similar, another person might not. But in the case that you gave me, Will, yeah, I mean, something like McDonald's with the Golden Arches, they are so famous. They're just so well known.
Yeah.
That almost any confusingly similar, almost any use of something even remotely close is likely, you're likely going to be hearing from McDonald's. Because when you have a trademark that famous, you have what's called trademark dilution protection, meaning that even if people won't necessarily think that there's a relationship between you and, say, McDonald's, and maybe even the products and services aren't even related, the marks are so famous that people will almost sort of get a people will almost think about they'll think about McDonald's even though they know that the two aren't related. So they get that very, very broad protection, wide scope of infringement protection.
Isn't that interesting? So I'm assuming you've seen the Eddie Murphy one.
Coming to America.
Yeah. Do a lot of people bring that up about how close that was? Or
I actually used that. I teach a course at Merrimack, or St. Louis Community College at Merrimack, and I use a video clip from that movie with the McDowell. I think it was McDowell's. It's funny because it really illustrates trademark infringement. If anybody's seen the movie, it's a ripoff of McDonald's. It's got a very similar Golden Arches. The name is McDowell's instead of McDonald's. They have the Big Mick instead of the Big Mac. they talk about how their burgers don't have their burgers are exactly the same except for the one at McDowell's doesn't have seeds on their buns. It's just really funny. So you can see the clip on YouTube.
Yeah, I'll link to it in the show notes because I think
it's
watching.
It's funny. But it's a really good example of trademark infringement.
Yeah. So I've seen on your website you talk a little bit about fair use. What does that mean?
Fair use is generally we're talking about fair use in the copyright sense. So fair use is basically – there's fair use in trademark too, but I'll talk about copyright first. So fair use in copyright basically means using the right to use – a copyrighted work. So, for instance, the right to use an image or a photograph or video or whatever it might be without getting the permission of the copyright owner.
Okay.
And so there are a lot of different factors that goes into determining whether a certain use might be a fair use. But, for instance, in the copyright statute, and I have it right in front of me, basically the courts, if you got into an infringement issue, copyright infringement issue, courts would look at, you know, whether the nature of the use was, you know, nonprofit or educational rather than commercial. You know, what the nature of the copyrighted work is and sort of the amount of the copyrighted work that you used. And it also is going to look at, you know, what the effect is on the potential market for the value or of the value of the copyrighted work. You know, if you're using a work and it's taking money out of the pocket of the owner, it's less likely going to be seen as fair use. If you're using an entire book rather than maybe a paragraph of a book, it's more likely not going to be seen as fair use.
More likely.
I mean, you know, and it's not always about the amount. You know, it also could be what portion of it you're using. So let's say you're using a song. You want to use a song, and instead of using like one lyric from the very beginning of the song, let's say you're using the entire chorus, which is the part that everybody knows. That might be less likely to be seen as a fair use than maybe if you just use one lyric from the song. So,
okay. Is that what just happened with the whole Marvin Gaye thing?
I did read about it. I don't remember the specifics. But I think that was more about, I'm pretty sure that was more about melody and
I think so.
Musical. Yeah.
Huh, interesting. So how can you determine where that line is of fair use versus not?
Well, it's very subjective. I mean, the best thing to do is kind of look at the factors that a court would balance. Again, that's in the Copyright Act, and you can see, okay, well, am I making money off of it? Well, if you're making money off of it, that's probably a good sign that it may not be fair use. You know, is it educational? How many copies of it are you making? You know, those kinds of things, all these kinds of things you have to consider. In the trademark, from a trademark viewpoint, you know, fair use basically means that you can use somebody's trademark under certain circumstances. So, for instance, if you want to refer to the product or the service offered by your competitor, well, the only way to really do that is to use the trademark, right? Okay. my products are better than ABC's products. Well, you got to be able to use ABC, right? Hard otherwise. You know, also doing like product comparisons, like, you know, you often see when you buy a generic or a store brand product, it'll say something like compare to, and then it'll say, you know, a product name. So like if you buy like moisturizing cream for your hands, it'll often say like compare to Vaseline. So those are all fair uses. There are limits, of course, to fair use of trademarks. You know, generally speaking, you really only want to use the amount of the trademark that's necessary to get your point across. So you can put compare to Vaseline on your bottle, but you can't start using their logos and their taglines to get the point across. So that's fair use in the trademark world.
Interesting. Okay. So let's say I did something and said compare to Vaseline intensive care, you know, and went on and on about it. And I got some sort of a cease and desist letter. What should I do next?
You know, it's really important whether it's trademark or copyright. You know, the example you gave was trademark. But whether it's trademark or copyright, you know, it's very important to take cease and desist notices seriously, especially if they come from a substantial, large company. You know, these companies have millions and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars invested in their intellectual property, in their trademarks, in their copyrighted works, and they can be very aggressive, so really the best thing to do is not ignore it, take it very seriously, go talk to an attorney about what your options are before it gets out of control. And by what I mean out of control is getting a lawsuit filed against you that is going to cost you way more than it would have cost to speak with an attorney and try to resolve the matter. So a lot of people, a good example are people who download movies or music from, like, say, BitTorrent websites or other websites. These things are being monitored nowadays, and people are getting notices that say, hey, we saw you uploading or downloading or sharing copyrighted material. And we are demanding that you pay us X amount of dollars for that. You know, if you ignore, if you talk to an attorney and maybe try to negotiate some kind of settlement, that is going to be way less than even responding to a lawsuit if it's filed. So, yeah. So really, the bottom line is don't ignore it and seek legal counsel.
Now, I know that YouTube is actually actively taking videos down if they have, you know, in particular music playing in the background. We shot a video one time going through the Smoky Mountains, and it was some really pretty scene that we were coming over the hill and all this stuff, but the music, the radio was on. So, you know, we uploaded it to YouTube, and of course they took it down within a matter of hours.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, because of the music playing in the background, apparently. So they weren't real happy about that.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you go on YouTube, you'll find all kinds of infringing videos. I mean, you're not gonna get rid of it. But I think what I do think is that content owners, video, music, whatever, I think they're getting better at picking and choosing their battles. Because you obviously cannot go after everybody, nor do you want to. I think they're really looking for major infringements that really hurt their business. You know, in your case, well, I don't think having that radio, the music playing, you know, on the radio in the background was really hurting them in any way.
But right.
Yeah, and I think the content owner probably would have never complained. But YouTube, you know, they're so scared about it that they're taking action. So.
Yeah, they've got obviously built-in filters and things like that to just listen for that stuff. So what about taking an image or a photograph and using it somewhere as long as I credit the original photographer?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think that that's okay. And, of course, you do want to credit, you know, the owner of the image or of the work that you're using, but that's not a substitute for seeking permission if, in fact, the image is under copyright protection. You know, a lot of people also say, well, I'm not making any money off it. I'm just using it on my website, whatever, and put it in my presentation. It's still a use that would you know, most likely require permission from the copyright owner. There are these programs now that are used by, photo licensing companies like Getty Images, for instance, and another company called Masterfile. They basically use this software. I think one of them is called PicScout. And they basically, this software scours the internet for infringing uses of the images that they license on behalf of photographers or other image creators.
Interesting.
And then when they find a hit, you get a nasty gram in your mailbox, you know, saying, hey, you're using this, you know, whether you credited the image or not on your website, they don't care about that. They want to be paid for the use of the image. So crediting, bottom line is, crediting the owner of the image is not enough. But on the other hand, though, there are also lots of works out there, lots of images that are under, you know, Creative Commons licensing, which is you're allowed to use it. But you do have to credit. You know, depending on what Creative Commons license it's under, there's like four or five of them. So that's a big movement now, you know, with this license, you know, a lot of this copyright licensing. It's people are willing to let other people use their stuff so long as it's credited properly.
Yeah. When my daughter works for me, and when she first started, you know, I told her when you put out a blog or something like that, always put some sort of an image with it because it breaks up the content and that kind of stuff. And it was interesting that her very first inclination was to go do a Google image search and just grab something that looked good. And
that is definitely a good way to get sued. This happens a lot, Will. Like, I've had a number of clients get these letters from Getty Images or Masterfile or whatever. They say, "Well, I didn't even make the website. I didn't even get this image. My web developer did this, you know."
Right. Yeah.
And of course, the web developer is either in India or long gone or, you know, not around anymore. And the problem is that even though maybe ultimately the web developer would be liable for the infringement, the issue is that the owner of the business is in the chain of infringement. So the copyright owner doesn't need to go after the web developer. They can go after the business owner. Right. The business owner could then go ahead and try to go after the web developer, but oftentimes the web developer is nowhere to be found. So, and there's so many options now for using, you know, for getting images very cheaply. I mean, go to iStock Photo, you know. These images are very inexpensive. You know you have the right to use them, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's what we did. I joined one called CanStock Photo, but they've got, you know, millions of images, and I just buy a package, and it typically costs me like $2 per image. You know, yeah. $2 is better than being sued. So
yes, considering that the damages, if you are sued and they're successful, the damages for copyright infringement would be thousands of times that $2. So it's a really big deal. And like I said, if you get sort of a cease and desist notice from, say, Getty Images or Masterfile or one of these, you have to take it very seriously, because those images are most likely registered with the Copyright Office, and they can just walk into court with their certificate of registration and be like, here's our certificate, this is evidence of our ownership, and you're not going to have a lot of defense, and you're going to be on the hook for way more than if you had just addressed the issue from the outset.
Yeah. Man, I appreciate you being on the show today. Can you tell me how people can get in touch with you?
Sure. You can visit my website, which is yourtrademarkattorney.com. You can also give me a call. My phone number is on my website, but it's also 314-749-4059. You can also reach me via email at morris@yourtrademarkattorney.com. Yeah, that's probably the best. There's lots of information on my website about trademark, lots of videos. I have a blog as well, so you know, feel free to check it out.
And you kind of hang out on the whole social media thing too, don't you?
I do. I do. All links to all my social media profiles are on my website, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, all those. So please come connect with me on social media.
Yeah, and you share some pretty cool examples in your social media of different things that are going on in the whole trademark arena.
You know, it's amazing. You wouldn't think that there would be a news story every single day about a trademark matter, but literally every single day there is a new trademark matter that are on major news sites. There's never any trouble finding a story about what's going on in the trademark world.
Yeah, and it always, most of the time it seems to be about somebody famous. So, you know, whether it's a football player or a singer or something, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, all the time. Again, it's and in fact, just this week, the Supreme Court ruled on a trademark matter. The Supreme Court doesn't take too many trademark matters. You know, it's probably, you know, one every 10 years that there's a trademark matter. So that was kind of big news in the trademark world. I won't bore you with the details of the trademark case, but it does go to show that even the highest court in the nation takes trademark law very seriously.
Yeah, well, listen, I appreciate you being on the show today. You really dropped some great knowledge on some things that I can only assume a lot of people don't, you know, realize, especially around the trademarks and copyrights and the intellectual part of things and the subjectiveness of it, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Anybody that wants to get a hold of Morris, like you said, can go to yourtrademarkattorney.com. Morris, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Will. It was fun.